Welcome to another episode of Microbiology Insights. I'm Dr. Caitlin Scott, your moderator for today's roundtable discussion. Today, we're diving into the fascinating world of microbiology. What is microbiology really? It's not just about the germs that make us sick. It's about understanding the unseen organisms that play crucial roles in our lives, from the environment to our health.
Absolutely, Caitlin. Microbiology is at the intersection of infection, immunity, and even biotechnology. With the advent of molecular tools, we've expanded our understanding of these tiny entities beyond just their role in disease. We're now able to explore their beneficial aspects too, like how they contribute to our microbiomes and ecosystems.
And let's not forget the systems perspective. Microbes are integral to various biological processes, influencing everything from nutrient cycling in the environment to our immune responses. They're like the unsung heroes, or sometimes the villains, in the story of life. Today, we'll unpack these themes and more, exploring how microbes interact with us and the world around us.
So get ready for an engaging discussion where we'll cover microbial identity, pathogenesis, host responses, and much more. Whether you're a student, a healthcare professional, or just curious about the microbial universe, there's something here for everyone. Let's jump into our first segment.
Let's dive into the microbial identity segment. Microbes are incredibly diverse, and they can be broadly classified into several categories: bacteria, viruses, fungi, protozoa, and archaea. Each of these groups has unique characteristics that define their biology and ecological roles.
Exactly, Olivia. For instance, bacteria are prokaryotic organisms, meaning they lack a nucleus and have a simpler structure. They can be classified based on their shape, like cocci, bacilli, and spirilla, and their staining properties, such as gram-positive or gram-negative. It's like a microbial fashion show.
And let's not forget about their replication modes. Bacteria reproduce asexually through binary fission, which is quite efficient. This rapid reproduction allows them to adapt quickly to environmental changes. It's fascinating how some can form spores to survive harsh conditions, essentially hitting the pause button on life until conditions improve.
Viruses, on the other hand, are a different story. They're not classified as living organisms because they can't replicate independently. Instead, they hijack the cellular machinery of host organisms to reproduce. Their structure is quite unique, often consisting of a protein coat and genetic material, either DNA or RNA. It's like they're tiny pirates, taking over ships to fulfill their mission.
And let's not overlook fungi. They play crucial roles in decomposition and nutrient cycling. Fungi can be unicellular, like yeast, or multicellular, like molds and mushrooms. Their cell walls are made of chitin, which is different from the cellulose found in plants. This gives them a unique place in the tree of life.
Protozoa are another interesting group. These are mostly unicellular eukaryotes that can be found in various environments, including soil and water. They often have complex life cycles and can be free-living or parasitic. Their diversity in movement, using flagella, cilia, or pseudopodia, adds to their intrigue.
Lastly, archaea are often found in extreme environments, like hot springs or salt lakes, showcasing their adaptability. They share some similarities with bacteria, but have distinct biochemistry and genetic properties. It's like they're the survivors of the microbial world, thriving where few others can.
So, to wrap up this segment, understanding microbial identity is crucial, not just for classification, but also for appreciating their roles in health, disease, and the ecosystem. Each group has its own story to tell, and we're just beginning to uncover these narratives.
Now let's delve into the fascinating world of pathogenesis and virulence. These concepts are central to understanding how microbes cause disease. Pathogenesis refers to the process by which a microbe leads to disease, while virulence describes the degree of pathogenicity, or the severity of the disease caused. Different microbes have evolved various strategies to establish infection and evade host defenses.
That's right, Victor. One of the primary tactics microbes use is the production of toxins. For example, Clostridium botulinum produces botulinum toxin, which can cause paralysis. Toxins can be classified into two main types: exotoxins, which are secreted by bacteria, and endotoxins, which are components of the bacterial cell wall that trigger strong immune responses.
And let's not forget adhesion. Microbes have specialized structures like pili and fimbriae that help them stick to host tissues. This adhesion is crucial for colonization and can be the first step in establishing an infection. It's like they're using tiny hooks to latch onto their hosts. Plot twists. Without adhesion, many pathogens wouldn't be able to cause disease at all.
Exactly, Caitlin. Furthermore, some pathogens have developed sophisticated mechanisms to evade the immune system. For instance, they can alter their surface proteins to avoid detection or produce enzymes that degrade immune components. This immune evasion can significantly influence the severity and spread of the disease.
Let's also discuss the role of genetic factors in virulence. Many pathogens carry virulence genes that encode for factors like toxins, adhesion molecules, and immune evasion strategies. The ability of a microbe to express these genes can determine its virulence. For example, the presence of plasmids can carry genes that enhance pathogenicity, allowing bacteria to adapt quickly to their environment.
Historical examples illustrate these concepts beautifully. Take Vibrio cholerae, the causative agent of cholera. It produces a potent enterotoxin that disrupts intestinal function, leading to severe dehydration. On the other hand, Bacillus anthrax, the agent of anthrax, has a complex life cycle and produces multiple virulence factors that can overwhelm the host's defenses.
In summary, understanding the mechanisms of pathogenesis and virulence is crucial for developing effective treatments and preventive measures. By studying how microbes interact with their hosts, we can better anticipate outbreaks and design strategies to combat infectious diseases. This knowledge is the foundation for advancing public health and clinical practice.
Now, let's explore how our bodies respond to microbial invaders. The host response is a complex interplay between various immune mechanisms that work tirelessly to defend us. We can broadly categorize these responses into innate and adaptive immunity.
That's right, Caitlin. The innate immune response is our first line of defense. It includes physical barriers like the skin and mucous membranes, as well as immune cells such as macrophages and neutrophils that respond quickly to infections. These cells are like the frontline soldiers, ready to attack any foreign invader they encounter.
And we can't overlook the role of pattern recognition receptors, or PRRs. These receptors help identify common features of pathogens, known as pathogen-associated molecular patterns, or PAMPs. When PRRs recognize these patterns, they trigger inflammatory responses that help recruit more immune cells to the site of infection. It's like sending out a distress signal to rally the troops.
Exactly! Inflammation is a key part of the innate response. It not only helps to contain the infection, but also initiates tissue repair. However, if inflammation is too intense or prolonged, it can lead to tissue damage. It's a delicate balance between fighting the infection and protecting our own tissues. Plot twist. Sometimes our immune response can do more harm than good.
And then we have the adaptive immune response, which is more specialized. This response takes longer to develop, but provides a robust defense against specific pathogens. It involves lymphocytes, including B cells and T cells. B cells produce antibodies that can neutralize pathogens, while T cells can directly kill infected cells or help coordinate the overall immune response.
What's fascinating is the concept of immunologic memory. Once the adaptive immune system has encountered a pathogen, it remembers it. This means that if the same pathogen tries to invade again, the body can mount a faster and more effective response. It's like having a personalized defense strategy for each invader.
However, some microbes have evolved clever strategies to evade the immune system. For example, certain bacteria can alter their surface proteins to avoid detection or produce substances that inhibit immune responses. This cat and mouse game between pathogens and our immune defenses is what makes immunology so exciting.
In summary, the host response to microbes is a dynamic and complex process involving both innate and adaptive immunity. Understanding these mechanisms not only helps us appreciate how our bodies fight infections, but also informs the development of vaccines and therapies to enhance our immune defenses. This knowledge is crucial in our ongoing battle against infectious diseases. In this segment, we'll discuss clinical syndromes associated with various microbes. Understanding these syndromes is crucial for diagnosis and treatment. Let's start with pneumonia, which can be caused by several pathogens, including Streptococcus pneumonia, Haemophilus influenzae, and even viruses like influenza. The clinical presentation typically includes cough, fever, and difficulty breathing.
Absolutely, Olivia. Pneumonia can be quite severe, especially in vulnerable populations like the elderly or those with compromised immune systems. The chest X-ray often shows infiltrates, and it's fascinating how different microbes can lead to distinct patterns on imaging. For instance, viral pneumonia may present differently than bacterial pneumonia. Plot twist, sometimes a single patient can have both.
Another common syndrome is gastroenteritis, often caused by viruses like norovirus or bacteria such as Salmonella and E. coli. Patients typically experience diarrhea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. The rapid onset of symptoms can be quite alarming, but it's important to note that most cases are self-limiting. However, dehydration is a major concern, especially in children and the elderly.
Right, Victor. And then we have meningitis, which can be caused by bacteria like Neisseria meningitidis or Streptococcus pneumonia, as well as viruses. Symptoms often include fever, neck stiffness, and altered mental status. It's crucial to act quickly, as bacterial meningitis can be life-threatening if not treated promptly.
Let's not forget about urinary tract infections, UTIs, which are predominantly caused by Escherichia coli. Women are particularly susceptible due to their anatomy. Symptoms include frequent urination, burning sensation, and sometimes fever. UTIs can escalate to pyelonephritis if the bacteria ascend to the kidneys, which is a more serious condition.
Exactly, Caitlin. Each of these syndromes highlights the importance of understanding the underlying microbial causes. And it helps clinicians not only in diagnosis, but also in predicting potential complications and guiding treatment decisions. For example, recognizing the signs of a severe pneumonia can lead to immediate intervention, such as hospitalization or intravenous antibiotics.
In summary, clinical syndromes provide a framework for understanding how different microbes manifest in the human body. By recognizing these patterns, healthcare professionals can make informed decisions to improve patient outcomes. It's a prime example of how microbiology intersects with clinical practice.
In this segment, we'll focus on the diagnostic methods used to identify microbial infections. Accurate diagnosis is crucial for effective treatment and management. Let's start with microscopy, which is often the first step in identifying pathogens. For example, a gram stain can help differentiate between gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria based on their cell wall structure.
Exactly, Victor. Microscopy allows us to visualize the morphology and arrangement of bacteria, which can provide valuable clues. For instance, cocci appear as spherical shapes, while bacilli are rod-shaped. This basic classification helps narrow down the possibilities before further testing is conducted.
And let's not forget about cultures. Growing bacteria on selective media can help isolate specific pathogens from a sample. For example, McConkie agar is used to isolate gram-negative bacteria and can differentiate lactose fermenters from non-fermenters. It's like putting the microbes in a little petri dish contest to see who thrives. Plot twist, sometimes the culture results can take days, so rapid tests are essential.
That's a great point, Caitlin. Rapid diagnostic tests have become increasingly important in clinical microbiology. Techniques like PCR or polymerase chain reaction allow us to amplify and detect specific nucleic acid sequences from pathogens, providing results in a matter of hours instead of days. This is particularly useful for viral infections where timely diagnosis can significantly impact patient outcomes.
Another valuable method is serology, which detects antibodies or antigens in a patient's serum. This can help identify infections that may not be easily cultured, such as certain viral infections or those caused by intracellular bacteria. It's like looking for the footprints of the pathogen rather than the pathogen itself.
And we must consider the sensitivity and specificity of these tests. Sensitivity refers to the test's ability to correctly identify those with the disease, while specificity refers to correctly identifying those without the disease. Balancing these factors is crucial to avoid false positives or negatives, which can lead to misdiagnosis and inappropriate treatment.
In summary, a combination of diagnostic methods is often necessary to accurately identify microbial infections. Each technique has its strengths and limitations, and understanding these can help clinicians make informed decisions about patient care. The relationship between clinicians and microbiologists is key to ensuring high-quality specimens and accurate results, which ultimately leads to better patient outcomes.
In this segment, we'll discuss treatment and control strategies for microbial infections. Understanding how to effectively manage these infections is crucial for patient outcomes. Let's start with antibiotics, which are used to treat bacterial infections. They work by targeting specific bacterial processes, such as cell wall synthesis or protein synthesis. However, it's important to choose the right antibiotic based on the pathogen and its susceptibility.
Absolutely, Caitlin. The emergence of antibiotic resistance is a significant concern in public health. Bacteria can acquire resistance through various mechanisms, such as mutations or acquiring resistance genes from other bacteria. This makes it essential for healthcare professionals to use antibiotics judiciously and only when necessary. It's like a game of chess. Strategic moves are required to stay ahead of the evolving pathogens.
In addition to antibiotics, we also have antivirals and antifungals. Antivirals are designed to inhibit viral replication and can be effective against infections like influenza and HIV. Antifungals, on the other hand, target fungal infections, which can be particularly challenging in immunocompromised patients. Understanding the specific mechanisms of action for these medications is key to effective treatment.
And let's talk about infection control measures. These are vital in preventing the spread of infections, especially in healthcare settings. Standard precautions, such as hand hygiene, use of personal protective equipment, and proper sterilization of instruments, are essential. It's like building a fortress around vulnerable patients to keep unwanted invaders out.
Vaccination is another critical strategy for controlling infectious diseases. Vaccines stimulate the immune system to recognize and fight specific pathogens without causing the disease itself. This not only protects individuals, but also contributes to herd immunity, which is vital for protecting those who cannot be vaccinated.
In summary, managing microbial infections requires a multifaceted approach that includes appropriate use of antimicrobials, infection control practices, and vaccination. It's essential to stay informed about emerging resistance patterns and new treatment options to ensure effective patient care. The collaboration between clinicians, microbiologists, and public health officials is crucial in this ongoing battle against infectious diseases.
As we wrap up this episode, let's reflect on the key insights we've discussed today. We've journeyed through the fascinating world of microbiology, exploring everything from microbial identity to treatment strategies. One of the major takeaways is the incredible diversity among microbes and their roles in health and disease.
Absolutely, Caitlin. We've seen how understanding the mechanisms of pathogenesis and virulence can inform our approach to treatment. The interplay between microbes and the host immune response is complex, and it highlights the importance of a tailored approach to managing infections.
And let's not forget the critical role of diagnostics in guiding treatment decisions. The advancements in laboratory techniques, from microscopy to molecular methods, have revolutionized our ability to identify pathogens quickly and accurately. This is essential for effective patient management and improving outcomes.
We also touched on the importance of infection control and prevention strategies. Vaccination, prudent use of antimicrobials, and robust infection control practices are vital in combating the rise of antibiotic resistance and protecting public health.
As we look to the future, it's clear that ongoing research and collaboration across disciplines will be essential in tackling emerging infectious diseases and understanding the microbiome's role in health. There's always more to learn, and the field of microbiology continues to evolve.
Before we sign off, I want to tease our next episode, where we'll delve into the exciting world of emerging pathogens and the latest strategies in vaccine development. You won't want to miss it.